Your speaker on this program is Brother George W. DeHaan.
My purpose in the lesson this morning to try the best I can to answer these three questions and to notice lessons which this story of Joseph has for us today. In the first place, I think God uses so much space in giving the story of Joseph in order that we may see his providence, in order that we may see the hand of God was working in the life of Joseph, and we may see that God would and could bring good out of everything that happened to his servant. You know, a Christian is an optimist. There's a buoyant, optimistic spirit all the way through the Old Testament. Down in the New Testament, it reaches the highest pitch of all when the Apostle Paul said, "We know that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose." We're rather immature in our study, in our youth, as we study our Bible school lessons. And then we gradually become acquainted with the spirit that permeates the world. We think about it and we say, maybe that means all things work together for the good of our souls, for our eternal good, but not for our good at the present time. Then as we grow older, we learn more about the Bible and our faith becomes stronger. We realize that Paul meant exactly what he said, that all things, good and bad, wise and otherwise, temporal and spiritual, no exception to it, all things work together for good to them that love God and are called according to His purpose. That you cannot hurt the Christian. Anything which you may do to him, God can and will make that work out for his good. And that God will see to it that the trials and problems and the troubles of life work out for the good of every person who loves him. Called according to his purpose just simply means someone who's learned the truth and has obeyed it, thus becoming a Christian. God calls people to be Christians by the teaching of his truth. God calls people to be preachers by the teaching of his word, not in a miraculous way. He speaks to us and calls us through his word. I want us to review the story of Joseph and notice the providence of God. You know the story of Joseph already, so I review it in reverse. Here is Joseph down in the land of Egypt. He's prime minister and has charge of all the country during the 7 years of plenty. He put up the grain in the storehouses, and then when the famine came, he parceled out the grain to keep the Egyptian people alive. He sent grain to other nations in order to help them in time of famine and distress. You heard the reading this morning from the 45th chapter of Genesis of how the brothers of Joseph stood before him coming to buy grain. Joseph was able to help them to provide deliverance for his family and to bring his family down into the land of Egypt. Why was Joseph able to do all of this? He was able to do it because he'd saved up the grain in the storehouses. But why had Joseph saved up the grain in the storehouses? Because the king had appointed him to that job. Why had the king appointed Joseph to that task? Because he had interpreted the dream which the king had about seven fat cattle coming up out of the river and seven lean cattle coming up and consuming the seven fat cattle and remaining just as lean as they were in the first place. Why had Joseph interpreted that dream? Because he'd been in prison, and the king's servant in prison had heard Joseph interpret a dream there and had forgotten all about it. All these years. You remember the butler said, "You've interpreted this dream. So when I get out of prison, I will remember you." When he got out of prison, he forgot Joseph. Years went by, and Joseph remained in prison. If he had remembered Joseph, Joseph would doubtless have been released from prison. He would have been gone to no telling where by that time. But the butler forgot Joseph, and God used that, even the forgetfulness of a man, to bring about his purpose. So Joseph was brought out to interpret a dream. Why was Joseph in prison in the first place? He was in prison because he'd been in Potiphar's house as a slave, as a servant, or a houseboy. You remember Potiphar's wife tried to get young Joseph to commit adultery with her. Day after day, this beautiful woman besought him to commit this sin. Because he remembered the teaching and the training which he had, because he remembered his father's face, he would not commit this terrible sin. He was finally cast into prison. Because one day she pulled his coat off of him and he left the coat and ran out of the house. Then this woman who had been spurned told her husband, "This young fella insulted me. He's acting in a way that he ought not to act." Since Potiphar's action is a bit unusual too. Nearly any good old-fashioned Tennessean would have taken care of that situation with his squirrel rifle and on short notice. That would have been the end of Joseph. But it seems that Potiphar knew his wife, and he knew Joseph, and apparently had about as much confidence in Joseph as he did in his wife. So she didn't harm Joseph, except to cast him to be cast into prison. Joseph was taken and cast into prison. I do not know that a man ought to shoot somebody else for stepping out with his wife. Maybe he ought to shoot both of them. But I do know that the logical human reaction and the first thing many would think about is to do this. But anyway, Potiphar took Joseph and had him cast into prison. Why was Joseph in Potiphar's house in the first place? Because the Ishmaelites had sold him to Potiphar as a slave. Why did the Ishmaelites have this 17-year-old boy as a slave? Because they bought him from his brothers back up in the land of Palestine. You remember that his brothers had cast him into the pit. At first they said, "Let us kill the boy when he comes." Reuben persuaded them to cast him into the pit. Then, when he came back to release Joseph from the pit, he found that his brothers had already taken him out and sold him to the Ishmaelite merchantmen who were passing by. There's something else interesting in the story. If these merchantmen had not passed at that time, Reuben would have released Joseph. He would have gone on home and never would have gone down into the land of Egypt at all. So God's purpose depended on these merchantmen passing at that particular time, in order that they might get the boy and take him down into the land of Egypt. Why did these brothers hate their brother? They hated him because their father was partial to the brother. He was partial to Joseph for a number of reasons. First of all, he was the child of his favorite wife, Rachel, and she had died, leaving this little baby, and also leaving the baby brother, Benjamin. She died when Benjamin was born. Also, Joseph had a dream. He dreamed that the sheaves of the field came and bowed down to another sheaf which represented Joseph. This meant that his brothers would bow down to him. When Joseph told his brothers about that, they were jealous and angry. At the first opportunity, they took the boy and cast him into prison. Now you have the story of Joseph. Every incident in the life of Joseph depended on the incident that happened before. And from the time this 17-year-old boy put on his coat of many colors, took his food basket, and went forth to meet his brothers in the field and to inquire after their welfare, God planned, overruled, guided, and directed to use him and to bring good out of everything that happened to him. Now, God did not plan each incident and reach down and make it happen. As far as we know, the hand of God actually touches the story only in two places. First, over in prison when Joseph interpreted the dream. And secondly, over at Pharaoh's house when he interpreted the dream about the famine. Outside of the fact that God gave him supernatural wisdom to interpret these two dreams, the incidents which happened to Joseph just came about in the natural course of human events, and God used these incidents to work his purpose. In order to believe that God can bring good out of what happens to you, in order to believe that God can and will bring good out of what happens to the Christian today, it is not necessary to believe that God is making it happen. It is not necessary to believe God has planned it and caused it to happen that way. But rather, when evil happens, God can even make that evil work for the good of those people who love him. While these incidents were happening, Joseph could not see the hand of God. He could not know that God was going to bring good out of it. Is there a story in all of the world that would touch our hearts more than this 17-year-old boy who was making the journey, walking some 60 or 70 miles from his home to find his brothers? And when he got to the place where they were, they had moved 15 miles further on over to Burpin. He received the message and hurried over there, as happy as he could be, for here are my brothers. I'm going to take food to them, and they're going to be glad to see me. When he got there, he saw a frown on their faces. They cast him into a pit and argued about whether or not to kill him. Undoubtedly, it must have occurred to Joseph, as it would to any child, that this is a joke they're playing on me. Now, I've thought that many times after Joseph was down in the dark pit, he must have thought, this is a joke they're playing on me, and they're going to release me in a little while. That would be the natural, childish thought. Then he may have thought the same thing after the Ishmaelite merchant men took him and went on their way, that they're not going to sell me, but my brothers are going to overtake them and release me. But he went on and spent that night and the next night and on out of that sight. He never heard from his brothers anymore. You think that a 17-year-old boy down in a dark pit, weeping, wondering why his brothers had done this thing to him, would understand that many years after that, God would use that very incident to save a whole nation of people? Do you think that a young man who stood up for his conviction when he was tempted and then was taken into court and punished on account of the fact that he would not do wrong and was cast into prison, do you think that he could see that God was going to bring good out of that? It was difficult to see. Then when he was in prison, he made one of the best prisoners anyone could be and gained the confidence of the people in charge of the prison. But do you think that this boy, spending years in prison, could see that God was going to bring good out of that? No, sir, he could not see it. And yet, when we begin at the end of the story and go back over it, we can see how God took advantage of everything that happened and used that to save a nation of people and to make Joseph a ruler in the land of Egypt. That answers, I think, our first question. Why did God take so much space telling the story? The answer is to let us know that his hand is in it all, that regardless of what happens to his child, it is God who makes that work out for good. Then that second question, when Joseph did get out of prison and became the ruler in Egypt, why did he not go home and visit his family? They would have been glad to see him. There were 7 years of plenty. He could have gone, and then when there were 2 years of famine, why did he not go? There's his father up there. There are his brothers. Why did he not go home? I think the answer to that is easy to see. He did not want to go home. He wanted to forget his home. He wanted to be separated from his home, and he did not want to see anybody up there anymore. Suppose your brothers had taken you when you were 17 and debated about whether or not to kill you, and you'd finally been sold into slavery, and then years later you were out of slavery and out of prison, you would not have it in your heart to go home and see those brothers. You would think, I do not want to see them. Then Joseph had a reason for not wanting to see his father. You know, the father thought Joseph was dead. He made no effort to find the boy. And no doubt Joseph rode away with the Ishmaelite merchant men thinking, my father has money. He's rich. My father has slaves and servants. And my father can raise an army and he'll come for me. He'll get me. Soldiers will come with their arms. They'll come with their money. They'll kill who ought to be killed and buy who ought to be bought. And my father will rescue me and take me home. Can you not see Joseph thinking that because his father had always done everything for him that needed to be done, he had in his heart, my father will come for me. But his father did not come. He went to Egypt. He worked in slavery. He languished in prison. So far as he knew, his father never turned a hand to help him. So he did not want to see his father anymore. He wanted to forget the whole crowd. He married, had a happy home, and a precious boy was born to him. And when the boy was born, he went into the room and said, we'll call his name Manasseh, which means, I have forgotten. Because he said, I have forgotten my father. I've forgotten everybody up there, my father, my brothers, and all. All that's behind me now. I have a happy home of my own and the ruler here in the land of Egypt. I have my wife, and I have my own little boy. We'll call him Manasseh, which means I've forgotten. So I think you see why Joseph had no desire to go home. He did not want to go back to a family that had treated him in that way. One day his brothers came to buy grain. The men went in and told Joseph, there's some men here to buy grain. And Joseph issued a decree that all strangers and all foreigners coming into the country should be brought before him. When Joseph went in, the men were brought before him, and he saw his own brothers. I do not know what was in his heart at that time, but he looked at them, and his feelings were not very kind toward them. He said, you're spies. Come down here to spy out the land. They said, no, we're not spies. We're all the sons of one man up in the land of Canaan. There's been a famine for 2 years. There's been a drought, and we do not have any grain. We've heard that there's grain down here. They said, our father had 12 sons. We are 10 of them. One is not. That was Joseph. And they said, the other, the baby boy, is at home. Joseph's heart was touched. The one person back at home that Joseph had never had any animosity toward was little Benjamin. Benjamin was just a baby when Joseph left home. Benjamin was his own brother, and these others were all his half-brothers. He remembered his mother when she died after giving birth to Benjamin, how she'd held the baby and blessed him, and how he stood by when his mother was buried. When Joseph thought about Benjamin, his heart was touched. And he wept. He said, does your father still live? They said, yes. Joseph had one thing in mind, and that was, I want to get Benjamin down here. I have money, power, position, and influence, and I want Benjamin down here, and I want the rest of them at the other side of nowhere, if possible. He said to these boys, I do not believe you. You're spies. If what you're saying is true, go home and get the other brother and bring him down here so I can see him and prove that it's the truth. These boys were scared when they thought about bringing Benjamin into the land. They wanted to do something else. Joseph insisted that they bring the boy before they could all be released. They went home, brought Benjamin back, and when Joseph saw Benjamin, he loved his own baby brother. He was anxious then to get rid of the other boys and send them away and leave Benjamin there with him. He did not want to see his father. He didn't want to see these brothers, but he wanted Benjamin. He wondered how to do it. He invited all of them to come to his home for a feast with the governor. They did not know their brother Joseph. They were scared when they went over to the feast. The governor wanted to have them at the feast to give them an opportunity to steal something in the house. They didn't steal anything, so he put their money back into their sacks. He took his own cup, the governor's cup, and had that hidden in the sack of Benjamin. After these men had dined with the governor and were on their way home, the servants ran and overtook them and arrested them and said, "You had dinner with the governor, and you've repaid his kindness by stealing. You've stolen the governor's cup." They knew they were not thieves. They said, "No, we did not steal the governor's cup. Search the sacks and find it. The man who has the cup in his sack, put him to death." His servant said, "No, we'll not put him to death. We'll not keep all of you for bondmen, but we'll let all of you go home except the one who has the cup in his sack. We'll just keep him down here as a slave." Joseph planned that all of them would go home except Benjamin. "I'll have him kept in the land, and I'll be rid of the others," he thought. They searched in sack after sack. The cup was not there. They came to Benjamin's sack, and there was the governor's cup in the mouth of the sack where it had been placed. The servant said, "That's all right. The rest of you may go home, and we'll make a slave of this boy and keep him." They did not go home. They came back with the boy. As Benjamin was brought before the governor, Reuben spoke to his brothers and said, "I told you that we had no business harming Joseph, that it would come back to us. I told you that we ought not to kill him and we ought not to put him into the pit. I told you that we ought not to sell him into slavery." Joseph overheard that. That was the first idea that Joseph ever had about these brothers debating. That was the first time he had any idea that Benjamin had anything to do with saving his own life. Overhearing the conversation made Joseph think more of his brothers. He heard that they had saved his life back there, that they had a little decency about them. Then when Benjamin was brought before him, he saw a fine exhibition of character. Reuben said, "Send him home and take me and let me stay here as a slave in his place." Then another of the boys pushed Reuben aside and said, "No, send Reuben home and let me stay here as a slave. Send Benjamin home and keep me." Then all of the brothers said, "Keep us all. Let every one of us be slaves in Egypt. But send Benjamin home to his father." That must have been a touching scene. Joseph's heart melted. He asked for all the Egyptians to go out of the room. And after they'd gone out, the door had been closed. He said, "I am your brother, Joseph." And he wept. His heart was touched. He had not wept when he saw those boys who sold him into slavery. He had a different feeling, and he even contained himself quite well when Benjamin came. But when he saw these boys offering to give their lives for their brother, then his heart was touched. He wept as he thought about it. He said, "I am Joseph. Tell me about my father. Is he still living?" They said, "Yes, he's still living." Joseph had his father and family brought down into the land of Egypt. Joseph said, "Do not be hating yourselves because of what you did to me. You intended to hurt me, but God intended to use me to save you in this time of famine." That was the first time that Joseph knew what God had in mind. In the pit, in slavery, falsely accused in court and in prison, Joseph did not know what God had in mind. Only now does he know. Our last question, why would God select men mean enough to sell their brother and let these men be the founders of a new nation? The answer is, they are not the men that God selected. The men that God selected were these brothers standing and offering their lives to keep Benjamin from being killed. We must not judge people by the worst thing they ever did. You would not like for somebody to go back over your life, pick out the meanest thing you ever did and say, "Look at him, that's the kind of person he is." When we're put to the test, when we arrive at the height, when we're tried and rise to the most unselfish point in our lives, we would like to be judged by that instead of being judged by the mistakes that we made. 40 days after Simon Peter cursed and swore, God selected him to preach the first sermon opening the doors of the church. These men who at one time sold their brother into slavery were conditioned. They were brokenhearted by the experiences of life. They were penitent and sorry for what they had done. They became so unselfish that they volunteered to give their lives for Benjamin. God said, "These are the men I want to found a new nation. These are the people who are going to be the ancestors of Jesus Christ, my son, when I send him down to the earth." God's hand was in that story. God moved and brought about his purpose. Today, if you're a Christian, regardless of what happens to you, God will bring good out of it. To be unusually practical, suppose I come down the steps today, fall and break a leg, and I'm laid up in the hospital for weeks. God will bring good out of that. You would not say God caused Brother DeHoff to break a leg. It would probably be my carelessness that caused that to happen. But when evil happens, God not only can, but he will bring good out of it. Nothing can happen to the Christian but what God will make it work for good. All things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. The brokenhearted mother and father who bend over the casket of their little child need not say, "God reached down and took him away." Actually, that's true, of course, in the general plan of things, but specifically, nobody would think that God just reached out and killed someone. Yet these parents may know that God will bring good out of that. He will make that work out for their good and for the child's good. The child has gone on to heaven. Maybe a way out in the future, the child would have been an infidel or in rebellion against God, and now the child has gone on to heaven. Thus, in the great plan of God, things have worked for good. Suppose I die. In that case, I will go to heaven, and this body which is filled with aches and pains will be exchanged for a new one. Neither height, nor depth, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor any other creature can separate us from the love of God. Only our own iniquities and sins can separate us from God. If we are faithful to God, if we love him, he said, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." If we're faithful to God, God will reach down and make everything that happens work for our good. The Old Testament story, Joseph, the providence of God. The New Testament verse, Paul declares, "All things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose." If you'd like to be a Christian, we have an invitation song selected, and you're invited to come while we stand and while we sing.